Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Well, great first half of the show on the way. Fitzdog's in studio, and we got the Rotten Tomatoes game, and it's close, baby. First, Oracle, NetSuite. The problem, growing a business, and it's a hodgepodge, man. They have business systems, one for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory. It's a mess. Let's straighten it out. NetSuite by Oracle. Management software that handles all aspects of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. Save time, save money, save headaches by managing sales, financing, finance, accounting, orders, and HR instantly right from your desktop or phone. The world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering a valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/Adam. So try it, get some great info, and grow your business. Why not? That's netsuite.com/Adam. Download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/Adam. Support for the Adam Carolla podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Imagine how it feels to have an award-winning team by your side through every step of the mortgage process. That's exactly what you get with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage does more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. They've helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. When you're ready to purchase your home, and the home of your dreams, they can help you as well. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 6 years in a row. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Right, Dawson?
Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Celebrating the life of Eddie Money, born Edward Mahoney, spent a couple years as a New York City cop until he found out you can rhyme border and water. We're shaking with the money man on the toolbox. Yeah.
Mama never understood what it's like for a when the number one son goes bad, playing cards with the devil's hands. But daddy got real sick so quick, four walls never understand. I was the one who got good with the gun, took the money from the rich man's land. Give me some water, cause I shot a man on the Mexican border. Cuckoo water, give me some water.
Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California. This is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Greg Fitzsimmons. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, much more devastated about ruining that omelet than anything said about him at the roast, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The choice for the gun demanded you get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks to Rocket Mortgage, NetSuite, Zorro, Stamps.com, Castro Ledge for sponsoring the show. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Tell me what you want. For your birthday, Brian.
Oh. Yay.
Tell us what you want. Oh,
Bald Brian's birthday. Like my dad's is tomorrow.
Oh.
But I don't know how old he is. I have to figure that one out.
Yeah. Don't be a one-upper, like I said before.
I didn't know you're... I probably knew you two a day apart, but just didn't think about it.
Last time was celebrated on stage in Seattle.
That's right.
The live show for the Cruise. Truly mind-blowing with that video tribute that you guys put together. Well, not you guys, but no, was put together for me.
Greg Fitzdog Fitzsimmons is in here. He's got shows in Vancouver, Yuck Yuck, September 20th and 21st. Seattle, speaking of Seattle, Laughs, September 22nd. Fort Worth at Hyenas on October 4th. And Houston as well. That's October 6th at the Secret Group. So more dates and tickets at fitzdog.com. And Laughs with Bald Brian coming up November 2nd. I'll be there and Fitzdog will be there.
Oh, yeah.
Good
Can't
to
wait.
See you, Fitzdog.
Writing some new jokes. Good to see you guys. Eddie Money, you know, I was thinking about how big Eddie Money was. Like, what a staple of classic and pop rock. But you know what hurt him? Eddie Rabbit.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It split him a little bit.
Was Eddie Rabbit his last name for real, like Money Mahoney? Was his real name like Robert
Steen Raboni.
Or Raboni? Either way, yeah, it didn't help. He had the windshield wipers flapping and the driving in the rain song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got hot. It makes you wonder.
Edward Thomas Rabbit.
So here's the question.
Because who'd pick Rabbit?
Here's the kind of question that is kind of dawning on me. All right. So Eddie, so you think about guys like Eddie Money, and they were ubiquitous when I was in junior high, and they had hits and hits, and they were as hot as Beyonce is today, you know, just big, big hits, right? And it just kept coming, and then it stopped. Mm. And then you think about, I don't know, comedians, there's a version of that with comedy, there's a version of that with acting. And then there are other versions where they just people just keep going. They're just always there.
You mean creating new material?
Yeah, not only creating new material, but having new material consumed. You know, like I'm sure Eddie Money was writing, performing, and making songs. We weren't consuming them in 2004, or certainly not to the level.
No, not rabid.
And it's obviously rabid. Hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep that up. On the other hand, we can think of names musically, comedically, Robert De Niro or whatever. They just keep making. They just keep going. They just keep going. Is that its own talent? Are they more talented? You know, the fact that we've not gone 2 days without hearing J-Lo's name in 26 years.
Right. Well, right.
Yes, but I think she's the new paradigm, which is she's diversified, man. She's on TV. There's a movie coming out this weekend.
Right.
Like, I don't know how relevant she is in music today. Like, is she making tons and tons of, like, chart-topping hits?
She was just on, was it the Grammys this year, where she fucking destroyed?
Oh, is that the Motown thing?
Here's what I'm saying. Eddie Money and many others whose names escape us sometimes because they've been out of our lexicon for
Eddie
a while, are good enough to have multiple hits be spread out and have all of us be aware of them for a longish period of time, you know, good 5-10 years. So is it their ability that's not, or is it not in vogue with the times anymore? Like, there's some of those bands like, you know, punk rock or disco, you know, it kind of comes and it goes. Now, you could still evolve and you can still switch gears. I mean, Madonna's probably the greatest example of just turning, reinvent, turn the page. Maybe Lady Gaga is now turning into that. Is that sheer horsepower talent? Or is that more of an innovative business kind of approach?
I think it's about legacy. There's some people that are interested in a legacy. They want to be known as, if not the greatest, one of the most important people in their field.
And but can't Eddie create? He created, when I was 13, I knew Eddie Money songs. My son's 13. He doesn't know Eddie Money songs. Why can't? Or couldn't he have created songs for my 13? You know, like, I don't know. Seth MacFarlane's just going to keep making cartoons, keep making things, just going to keep. And my kids will watch it. And then their kid, I watch it. My kids will watch it. Their kids will watch it.
Right. I think some people, you make enough money and you go, this is fucking great. I got an assistant. I got 3 houses and I'm not driven anymore. And for other people, it's not about the money. It's about – wanting to be remembered.
But I don't feel like a lot of these guys take their foot off the accelerator as much as society decides we're done with their product. Yes, right. Cedric Dawson's been leaning.
I interviewed Eddie Money once on the radio, and he is almost a parody of himself. I've never met a more high-energy individual. I believe the dude's got a motor. I don't know that that answers your question.
I think he interviewed me. I think... Oh, no, that was Greg Kinn.
Yeah, in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that was in the Bay Area. Yeah. But I'm assuming everybody, every band that was on K-Rock in the 90s when I was on K-Rock and they were blowing up and there were all these Everclears and all these, you know, and these are all
you
good guys.
You mean the ones that are still on K-Rock?
They're still on K-Rock, but they were selling millions of records in 1996. And now they're not.
Well, Third Eye
Blind. They've all came out with material since. They just can't get their hands around it like Beyonce can.
Right. I think, okay, so just like you pointed out, like the difference between like stand-up comedians and bands. Bands can play, you know, the hits and people are there for the hits. Stand-up comedians can't just do the same material. It's like people want to hear what's new, what's new. Like, I think music tastes change, like, right, every 8 to 10 years, radically, right? We have grunge, then we have pop, then we have, well, like, it changes radically. Whereas comedy, like, we still find Richard Pryor funny or Steve Martin funny or Bill Hicks or whatever. Like,
I mean,
comedy is more timeless, and thus, you know, you can have that career that goes 40, 50 years. But if you're Jacob Dylan and the Wallflowers, you're talented and you can write good songs, but you had your time and your time is done.
Brian, once again, your half-baked notion has reminded me of something brilliant that's cooking
that's
in my own head.
What I'm here for, buddy.
I have lamented many times, and I think Fitzdog probably, every comedian has lamented that band gets to just go out there and play the hits. But as I've talked about many times, be careful of the free road or the easy road. That is an easy road. They know all those songs. Yep. They can do them in their sleep. The crowd is never going to fight them.
No.
And
so,
dude, if you're Smash Mouth and you have 8 songs, you can tour.
Hey now.
Every state fair on the planet.
Fair, you can tour the rest of your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But what if, what if somebody said to Fitzdog, hey, next time you're heading down to Boston, I got a magic wand. It'll make everyone forget your last set. You know, the last time you're at the Wilbur Theater, you just do the same one again.
Yeah.
You'd be back in Venice going, oh, you put the steno pad down and you'd go, I'm going to the beach, play some volleyball.
Right.
Like you'd go, good.
You sure know
hits. I don't have to do this.
That's why you work old folks homes. Go back every year.
Right.
I don't remember shit.
Right. Or they're dead. Oh, they'd probably move them out. You're right. No, so here's what I know it sounds like I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. Jacob Dylan is a perfectly talented dude who I'm sure could evolve just the way comedians from the 80s and 90s have all evolved. There is no best of. Mm-hmm. You are forced. You have to come up with a new set every year. You have to come out with a new special. The other direction, the bands, you're compelled to go the other direction.
If you don't play one headlight.
So now, what have you done? Well, if you're, you know, a comedian, if you're Seinfeld or Bill Burr or something, you are just moving, creating, moving, and creating. If you're a hot 80s, 90s band, you're looking in a rearview mirror that's just kind of tilted down and faced at you, and you're just sitting in park. You're just, or possibly reverse.
Right.
And so what happens? Well, what happens is everybody, you don't get new audience members. You get a large group of people who loved your hits 15 years ago that gets a little smaller every single time you go out. If you see those guys, they go out and play big arenas and everything when it's happening, but next year they come back and they play a theater, you know, and the next time they come back they play a club, you know, like it just, because you're not getting new members into the thing. If you're Jerry Seinfeld or a comedian or Seth MacFarlane or whatever, you're always drawing in new people into your tent. So this thing that we wish we had, like, oh, I wish I could just go out and do the best of my jokes or cover someone else's joke.
Like, yeah,
here's one that inspired me.
You do something off of the White Album, or you cover a Led Zeppelin song, and everyone goes nuts. Right. So if I covered a Fitzdog joke, everyone would go nuts.
Here's one by Lemmy Bruce.
Be careful what you wish for, because I think that has retarded the growth of these bands. And the reason these comedians, a lot of them, you go, this guy's still going, he's mm-hmm. still churning, he's still making material, he's coming out, what's his sixth Netflix special, and it's funnier than his third one, you know? You are compelled to do that. I mean, if you're that band who just has those hits and is showing up at the county fair, are you really grabbing the pad and writing new shit for that and working out a new order and everything? Are you just going, fuck it, I can do this in my sleep?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's also, do you change stylistically? Like, you see certain comedians, like Carlin started out as the hippy-dippy weather guy and clean, and he did late-night sets. And
not
then
built to last.
What's that?
That character, not built to
right,
last.
Right. And so then he transformed, and he became part of the hippie movement, and he was very anti-war, and then he became, and then he got into the whole anti-church thing, and then he became very environmental. Like, he went through phases and grew. It wasn't just that he was writing a new hour, because Seinfeld, as great as Seinfeld is, he hasn't morphed or changed or grown as a persona.
No.
His material just refills with the same kind of observational stuff.
I'm not. You're not saying it like it's a knock, but I don't think that's a knock, is it? You're
no, just but I mean, in terms of staying relevant, you look at the Beatles, or a band that, you know, has changed and grown the times.
Yes, but to my original point, the Beatles, were, as much as they evolved better than any other band, they were only around for 8 years.
Yeah,
less than that. You know, like releasing albums.
Right. Well, U2's gone through a lot of phases.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'm just realizing that in life, it's my sort of looks great with your shirt off in high school syndrome, which is the guys I know.
Classic Fitzdog syndrome.
Hey, now.
Who look great. Well, I'll include Gina in that mix, too, in high school. She would have garnered more attention than my buddy Ray.
Ray's like, where are you going?
My two best friends were two dudes who looked really damn good with their shirts off in high school and didn't have to lift weights or eat right or anything. They just smoked cigarettes, drank beer, and took their shirt off, and everyone argued with them because they'd go, oh, you've been working out hard. And they'd go, I don't work out. And they'd go, get the fuck out of here, which would be the greatest thing that anyone ever said to you. Those were the kinds of work. I would argue with people that I did work out.
They'd go, get the fuck out of here.
Right. But those guys may have had muscles, but they never got to exercise the hard work muscle, and it hurt them later in life. There's a chick, looks, you know, blonde hair, hot in a bikini, never had to crack a book in high school. At 41, how's it working out? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't get that. And as a comedian, you're constantly churning. Like, you're just constantly churning. And you know, I just did a roast, and it was like a Chinese fire drill for me. Like, I had like 8 days to prepare, and it's like churn. Like, what is the kind? What if someone said, like, oh no, they want to hear all the stuff you did at the Pam Anderson roast? Just pull that file up and load it into teleprompter. I'd go, oh, okay, I can do. I'd just turn the TV on and go, I'll just wait till I get there. So, as comfortable as that would be, or as cool as it would look great in your underpants without working out, the workout
it's important.
It keeps you around longer.
Well, it's fear. You know, I mean, it's a fear of failure. And, you know, if you don't have to take that chance, then why take it? Then what is it that makes some people face that fear and walk through it and continue to grow?
I don't know. My feeling with fear-based things is when somebody says, do you want to do Dancing with the Stars or the Alec Baldwin roast, you should feel a little bit of fear. And then you should immediately go, yes, based on that little bit of fear. And then you lock it in, and then you hang up the phone, and now you're in sort of what am I going to do about it mode. Like how
work toward.
Now I have the fear. Now I have the commitment and the fear. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do to negate me screwing up on the parquet or on the dais?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see how much I can do. Not now. It's kind of weird that shitty students don't really have that. The oral report just shows up on Monday, and they just come walking up there with a boner going, Levi Strauss.
Made some jeans.
He did jeans. Wait a minute. Oh, I'm wearing Levi's now.
Show and tell.
How comfortable jeans?
The end. Yeah, they don't have that. Here's what's gonna happen.
I told this anecdote before, but it's been years. So Jerry Rice, right, greatest receiver to ever play the game, possibly greatest player to ever play football, in the era of no fear. Remember the T-shirts? No fear, no fear, right. Never have fear. Don't play scared. Jerry Rice had an interview, like in his prime. He's like, I'm scared all the time.
Of course.
I'm scared that I'll drop a pass. I was scared that I would be cut in training camp my first year. I was scared that I would let my team.
How about running across the field full speed and getting annihilated by somebody?
Fear's a great motivator.
Yeah. Yes. It absolutely is. It gets people to do things.
Don't play tentative, but like be afraid of dropping the. How dare you?
I'm laughing because one time my wife said to me, "I'm scared of you," and I went, "Oh God, I wish that was true." God,
what I wouldn't give.
This is what I wouldn't give for just a little bit of fear.
I know. The worst is when you cock your fist at her and she doesn't duck. I am not a husband at all.
No, blink her eyes. You know what? We had that scene in Pesci in Casino when he was in the alley and he just kept punching that guy and he wouldn't go down and they're like, boss, you still got, you've been drinking tonight or whatever. Like,
that's right.
Remember that? Yeah, like, feel like you lost it, man.
Right, right.
You lost a little snap on that jab, you know?
So Tony Soprano in that fight
against
Bobby Bacalieri.
Yeah.
That was a great Casino scene where it's like,
I almost forgot about that.
Pesci was used to just cold cocking guys and dropping him, and they just
he was getting
that guy
winded, like beating up on somebody.
Yeah, he wouldn't drop, and his sort of henchmen around him were kind of going like, "Oh, you were drinking all night." Or
I think
that guy
Vincent was amongst those.
Yeah, what was that scene, Maxipata? See if you can find that.
He's not getting winded like punching somebody.
Yeah, but you could also his crew also was realizing he wasn't the one punch knockout artist anymore. All right, I got a question for you guys. Oh, and Maxipata, you're going to have to grab my phone or tell someone to grab my phone. Like, the last recording I did was loud ranchero music. There's a dude. I'm annoyed by this guy, but I also like him. And you guys tell me if you met a version of this dude. Could be any job, any ethnicity, male or female. The dude who works the parking at my dentist, and I've been there, had oral surgery, so I've been there like four times in the last year. He works the parking shack. He's a parking guy. But he's wearing like a vest and a tie.
Yeah.
He's got ranchero music blaring, and he's wearing like the big, I'm assuming fake gold Rolex, you know? But he's got his mustache groomed, and he's got his hair going, and he can't be making more than $14 an hour, but he is dressing like he owns the building. Mm-hmm. He's treating everyone with energy fairly. The more I talk about, minus the ranchero music, which is blaring from his little...
Sounds like a great guy.
His little phone booth. I like that guy much more than the flatliner who doesn't want to be there,
should
right?
Should strive to be that guy.
Yeah.
He's showing up for work.
There used to be, every once in a blue moon, you'd get that waitress or waiter, like the old guy who just wanted to be a waiter.
Yeah, career waiter.
Not working on a script or had a podcast.
He's got a napkin over his arm. As he's
Musso and Frank's.
There.
Yeah.
Musso Frank.
Well,
yeah, and just was into it. Like, whatever it is. And I will tell you, this guy always seems to be in a good mood. Mm. And I've told you guys, when I was a carpenter, but struggling comedian carpenter, like, you know, everyone who works at Starbucks is trying to write plays or do whatever. I was unhappy because it's like, here I am every day doing carpentry, but what I want to do is be on radio or be on stage or writing comedy or whatever it is. At some point, about 5 years in, I just gave into it. I just said, this is what you do. You get up every day at 6 a.m, you get in your truck, and you go build houses. And I just went, if that's what you're going to do every day, it doesn't mean you can't pursue comedy or take groundling classes or dream of being on the radio or anything else. But if this is what you're going to do 5 days a week for 9 hours a day, why don't you get good at it?
Right.
Why don't you not get good at it, but own it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get your shit together. Organize your tools.
Be the best version of you in that moment.
And I immediately was happier just at work because I was just being a better version of a carpenter and I was at peace with it.
And also opportunities happen with that energy. Like I remember working on Crashing. We had you'd have PAs and PAs are making I think $500 a week. And these are guys in their 20s, women in their 20s, and they're staying in an apartment with three roommates in deep Brooklyn and they can't pay their fucking rent. They're probably begging money off their parents and they're working 14-hour days. And then they have a shit attitude. It's like, no, the whole point is that you're being seen by producers that will bring you up and give you like an you know, associate producer job or something with some. But if you don't have a good attitude, why are you making all this sacrifice?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a it's something we talk about a lot. And I was talking to it about and it got another good Drew nodding off.
Oh, no.
I'm going on a rant tape. Does Dawson have that rant share? I just held my phone out the window as I was driving past his phone booth that he...
Jarring.
The entire garage is filled with this music.
Well, I mean, that's his office.
Yeah, I get it, but close the fucking door.
Keep the change.
It was a dollar. I gave him $5. Don't keep the change. He goes, thank you, my friend. Aww. Stay thirsty. So here's what I was talking to Drew about before I play his next super boring clip. It's something we played earlier.
Was this from the same
last
day?
Week.
Was this since then?
I was going to say, if he's keeping this going, we gotta have a talk.
What are the signs of a stroke?
The beauty of Drew is when I tell him when he's taping a show, I go, hey, wake up. I'm tired of doing all the fucking talking here. Get off your computer, whatever. Pay attention. Then we do the next show. 11 minutes later, he does the exact same thing again, which is kind of an obsession I have. Like it's my if I tell someone you're late, don't be late anymore. Give me 5 days of not being late. Don't be late the following day. Mm-hmm. Like they come back. What I was talking to Drew about. Which I think will work with Crashing and PAs. And I'm talking about here to some degree. Hierarchy. We've done away with hierarchy. The person who's the PA doesn't really recognize the difference between the writer, the producer, the associate producer, doesn't know that in the world of production, it is exactly like the military.
Right.
Thanks, Drew. There's generals and then there's colonels and they move it on down the line, right? And they are the privates. Like they literally just got to camp and they're in basic training. They don't understand who they're in front of and how they're acting in front of because their entire short life, if they're 23 or whatever, hierarchy has been torn down.
Yeah.
Look, your teacher's your buddy. You're calling them by their first name. Your dad is not your dad. He's your best boy. You know what I mean? He wants to be. Everyone is trying to be everyone's buddy. And it's also been explained to them that the man is bad and that, you know, that cop's not the boss of you and the principal's not the boss of you. And no one's the boss of you. You're your own boss. So with that being beaten into their heads their entire life and... There's no physical hierarchy. The rich guy who's running the production is not wearing spats and a top hat or anything. He's wearing
blue basketball shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, he's wearing cargo shorts and a t-shirt. Yeah, right. There is no physical. You couldn't identify it visually, like who's whatever. Everyone's driving a Prius. Like, we don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
And that kid has been taught that nobody is the boss of him. And that if he or she feels a certain way, then it is. So then when the person shows up into the office filled with bosses, filled with generals, but these are generals without uniforms. So no one like knows whether to salute or not. And then they hang out and they have a piss poor attitude. And you think, why are they doing that in front of me? And the answer is because you're no higher than them. Mm-hmm. There's no hierarchy. Yeah. They're just there. And you go, God damn, you're showing me a lot about yourself that you really don't want me seeing because I'm going to move on to other productions and other things. Or everyone's going to move on to everything and they're not going to want to take you with them. But they don't see that you're above them.
Right. And also, your boss is on social media just like you. He's tweeting shit, and you can read it, and you can comment on it, and you can hate. You know, there's no, like, social media is another equalizer. But there was one PA on Crashing that stood out. And you know why? After lunch every day, he would walk around with those, you know, those little plastic things with the dental floss in them?
Yes.
He'd hand them out to every single person in the production.
Let's go get her.
That guy, you fucking remember that guy. And when you're thinking about, we need a guy to be the head of transportation, to oversee the vans, how about the guy that makes that extra effort?
Floss guy.
The floss guy.
Yeah. It is so...
That's $2 worth of, you know, investment and inordinate amount of goodwill.
A little, unless he was using it first. And then it's a setback.
It's completely the opposite.
No, anyone who's ever been on a set or in a production remembers these vivid little actions. And they're not even, sometimes they're inactions, but sometimes they're just little gestures, they're symbolic, whatever. That, of course, you'll remember that your whole life. And oftentimes you don't even know the guy's name. But somebody goes, we had five PAs. We're going to make one of them associate producer for the fourth season of Crash. You go, Floss Guy.
Yeah.
Give a Floss Guy.
And I know everything I need to know about Floss Guy.
Conversely, I remember once when I was shooting a movie and they were like lining up the shot sort of outside and somebody said, the porta potty is like in the shot. The porta potty from the set was the like crew. In the shot. And it... need to move like 8 feet to the right. And of course, like Kevin Hench, who wrote the movie, ran across and started pushing the porta potty. And then like Nate, who was directing or whatever, wrote whatever, he producing, he started pushing. But there was like a PA that was just standing next to the porta potty and just watching.
Not it.
Just like kind of watching the two guys work. And I was like, all right, well, that guy's out.
Yeah.
Because he's watching two generals push a shit bucket out of a frame. And he's just watching. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of just watching.
Yeah.
And it sticks in the craw of the boss man. We used to do it at the man. I know exactly how Kimmel's wired. He's wired the exact same way. He's wired for floss or not pushing the porta potty.
Because people who stand around don't think they're being noticed. And it's quite the opposite.
It's quite the opposite. Yes.
And also, I think people are upset of there's a union mentality, too, of not upsetting the status quo. Mm. Like when we're going back to Crashing, there would be three writers. There was like eight writers in L.A. and then like two or three of us would go to New York to do the punch up on the set. And we had this guy, Mike Lawrence, who came in this past summer.
Oh,
he's
Mike
so
Lawrence.
Funny.
He's
oh, so, my God. He was at Clusterfest. We were dying.
He's fucking great. And he was one of the writers on the roast.
Yeah, I saw him.
He eviscerated people on the roast battle at Clusterfest.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. So anyway, so he shows up, and he works so hard that me and the other writers sitting there in our chairs, and after every take, he'd jump up, run up to the showrunner, the director, and I really felt myself like the old union guy, like, hey, kid.
Right. Dial it down.
Dial it down.
I saw, Mike was at the Rose.
Was he?
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Mike's got a big beard.
God. Yeah.
Glasses.
Kind of a teddy bear dude.
Yeah. He was writing jokes for the Roast, and I saw him at the table read, and then I saw, it's nothing worse than doing a table read. The worst table read is, it's actually funny. Oh, I never even thought about this dynamic. I think Fitzdog will like this. When you do a sitcom, there's a table read. And the table read is comprised of jokes that everyone at the fucking table wrote. So they laugh heartily.
Big shills, yeah.
Yeah. That's my joke. That's your joke. Yep. Or it's a joke we worked on together. When you do a roast and the comedians or the comedy writers send you over 30 jokes... and you've chosen one of them and decided to go with the rest of them as your jokes, then you sit at that table and you pitch to go, here are the jokes, fellas. And it's none of, I'm like, I've rejected all of your jokes.
Yeah.
Here are my jokes. It's a little different environment.
Yeah.
Not as heartily. You're right.
Not, you don't quite get, we all know, look, a good joke is a good joke. There's going to be a laugh. And a bad joke is a bad joke, fine. But there's a lot of sevens in there that could kind of go either way. And if you wrote it, or the guy next to you wrote it, you will get a little more.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of that. And also, it's hard because when you for you, like most comedians, it really has to be written in your voice. It has to be somebody who sat down and started with, what's this guy's voice, and then wrote the joke.
Yeah,
they, so it can be a fantastic joke, but it doesn't work for you.
I always sort of say it all the time. I go, these are a bunch of good jokes. And no, that's not an indictment on the joke. It's like I want to do my jokes.
Yeah.
Like, if your joke is a 9 and my joke's an 8, I still do my joke because I thought of it. And this was a little bit of a sort of integrity to it. Like, I'd
sure.
like to say this might now. If my joke's a 7 and yours is a nine, we're going with yours. All right, we got that. Well, I don't know. Do you have Fitzog? We were laughing last week at Dr. Drew, who is in New York, and he tends to check out if he's on the phone doing a podcast with me. And I'm assuming he's looking at his computer, or whatever, and he just lets me talk and talk and talk, and then.
But you split the money evenly, right?
Right down the middle.
Yeah.
Favorite nation.
Sometimes I do. And then, I'll tell you what.
And every once in a while, I'll go, am I right, Drew? Or what do you think? And he'll go, huh? Like now he's got to get off his browser and be like, what?
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
He's got to make a noise to acknowledge he's still there, but he's not listening.
So I yelled at him last time about doing that. Well, I don't know. Maybe we can play Max Zapata a version of the last one. It's just like the last minute
when he's
of
taken
it,
to task
or something
and establishing,
like that.
Yeah,
just the last. It's 3 minutes long. If you get the last minute of
maybe
it,
maybe you guys should get paid the by the word instead of splitting it down the middle.
Well, he has kids and a wife, and I'm not that cruel because he would go home with a sock full of nickels every quarter. It wouldn't even be.
Every 2 weeks?
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Right. Yeah,
right.
That's him not listening.
Right.
We'll see if we can find that, Max Pat. Or maybe, Brian, do you have that? Let's see. So, Drew, when you were saying, oh, maybe they believe it, they don't fucking believe it. You think anyone who works at the New York Times thinks Donald Trump is a white supremacist?
How long
has Donald Trump been in New York, in the scene where the New York Times is?
Right, right. Exactly.
40 years?
Yeah.
Have they ever pitched a story about him being a white supremacist in this fucking 40 years of covering Donald Trump?
Crazy.
Drew, are you getting a blowjob right now?
No, I'm listening.
This is just how you normally. All right, so that's Drew.
That's not doctored. That was actually.
I wish it was doctored.
Doctored Drew.
Oh my God.
Is what Brian does.
Well done.
Yes.
That's when Brian plays the drums.
I wish it was cooked. It is not cooked.
Greg, that's obviously like someone who's distracted and doing something else and like, oh shit, it's my turn to talk.
That's insane. That's like, did you see Chappelle's new special?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how. You know, a woman is told to call the police if a guy is jerking off while he's talking to her on the phone. And then he has the cop go, hello, what's going on? Well, this man is masturbating while I'm talking on the phone. He's like, hold on, slow down.
All right, let me hit Zorro, and then I'll play you one more from today's show with Dr. Drew. He did not learn his lesson, evidently. Zorro.com, Zorro.com. Find everything for your business, any size, any shape, almost any industry. Tools and equipment, safety, office and cleaning supplies and more. Tons of stuff for electrical, plumbing, contracting, manufacturing. And I just was on their website. They just have everything. So if you run a business and you need anything from trash cans to plungers to tools to anything, it's all there. The brands you trust, 3M, Milwaukee, Schneider, let's see, and Rubbermaid and everything else under the sun. Amazing customer service from real people based in the U.S., fast free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Visit Zorro.com/Adam. Sign up for your Zmail and get 15% off your first order. That is Zorro.com/Adam. So Drew had checked out and I yelled at him about it. And then we did another show and he checked out again. Now, the one.
You guys are recording like back. Oh, this is Greg. And this is the gift that's going to keep on giving. He doesn't have time to, you know, correct his ways.
Oh, yeah. We had the phone go off that week, too, right? We already played that one. Right. The thing that's kind of weird about Drew as a scholarly man is if you said to Drew, and I'm not sure, like I would say, like all the years we did Loveline, I would say, Drew, when I'm in the middle of like doing the show, like Dr. Drew's a board certified physician, addiction medicine specialist, Drew would take a draw off his coffee and go like, and I'd go, Drew, you get a little pad or napkin or keep it in your hand or don't clump it down. And he'd go, I'm super clumsy. I got flippers for hands. And I'd go, okay, but then don't, then leave the coffee where it is. Like, let me finish my thing. Don't do the thing. He'd also have the coffee brought in and the person would hand him the mug. And in the middle of me going, Dr. Drew's a board certified
physician. Thank you.
Thank you. He'd say off mic to the person that nobody knew was in the room. And Brian, you bear witness to this.
I was on the receiving end of a thank you once or twice.
I would tell Drew all the time, like, stop it. Don't do it. And he'd do the mug thing the next day. Yeah. Like, he wouldn't give it a week. He'd just do it the next show.
It's one of your best recurring comedy bits between you two.
Yeah.
Like, well-rehearsed, well-timed.
Yeah, and I would, like, go, look, can you avoid clunking down your mug when I'm setting up the show or interviewing the guest or whatever? And he just wouldn't do it. Like, he couldn't do it. So I don't know if it's passive aggressive or he's certainly smart, right, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think he subliminally or subconsciously prioritizes certain things over other things.
What percentage of people, because we talk about this, but I'm really thinking about this, what percentage of people simply are wired this way? When you go, don't do this, they go, they don't say anything, but they're wired in a way that goes, well, you don't tell me what to do, so now I am going to do it again, and I will let you know.
I'll put a little stank on
I'll
it.
I'll let you know that it's a bad idea for you to tell me what to do.
So it's even if they don't aggressive.
Even. It is, but I don't even know if they know it, or it's like, you don't come over and coach me up, and here's what you're going to get if you do try to coach me up. You will get more of the same.
Well, it sounds like you do see him as a child, or he's sort of like your ward.
Mm-hmm.
You chide him.
Not a bad way, but Batman had Robin, and he sort of felt responsible for the kid.
Right.
You know what I mean? But there was no animosity. He just felt like he needed to take care of him.
Right, take care of him, and when he made love to him, he would say, Robin, I'm teaching you, and someday you will do this too.
All right. So here's the one from today's show. Here's what I've said. The reason we know the name Jordan Peterson is because all the fucking pussies belly aching trying to explain to him that there's more than two sexes and all this kind of stuff. They created Jordan Peterson. They created Ben Shapiro. They've created all of this. This is where these people come from. If everyone just thought in a normal linear fashion with good old fashioned horse sense, there'd be no reason for Jordan Peterson.
Right.
Because Jordan Peterson would speak and you'd go, I'm not going to give that guy $10. He's telling the truth. What do I need him for?
Speaking the obvious.
He's talking about the obvious.
It's flat out timesheets.
It's always funny. It's always, another thing that's crazy is, I get the guys who are out there talking about, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an, well, I get why people don't like Louis Farrakhan. I get it. Jordan Peterson just basically says what is true and then backs it up with data. What's the beef? Where's the hate monger part come in? We're doing a show, right? Yeah, it was 15 minutes after the first one where I begged him to be involved with the show, like, that we split the money on.
It's like when you open the door for your dog to go outside and he just looks at you.
You don't split the money with the dog. You keep all the money.
That's right.
That's what I'm
you
saying.
Give him treats. Just give Drew treats.
What did Dr. Drew say he was
I'll
doing?
Give him talkie treats. You get a little giblet every time you chime in on a point I'm making. Yeah. Now, nodding your head doesn't count.
Dan, you betcha.
And you can't do that finger pistol thing where you make a little noise.
You said it.
Yeah. Righto.
You actually have to chime in.
With
on a point.
With a counter thought or a supporting thought.
You have to add and to the yes.
Yeah. After you take a 10-second pause, if he says something, rub his belly.
Oh, yeah. Get his leg moving.
Yeah, get his leg kicking.
All right, let's see if we can get some treats for Drew. We'll call him Talky Treats. He's on the high-protein diet.
Yeah, give him some cashews.
We'll get some buffalo meat or something like that.
Yeah,
and I'll give him a little treat every time he's listening and chimes in on a point that's being made on his show. Okay.
I like that.
That's awesome. All right. Oh, you have that casino scene ready? Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Thanks, Remo.
By now, Nikki and his crew had already hit rock bottom. I mean, Vegas really got to them. The booze, the coke, the broads. I mean, he
walk away.
The relief pitcher comes in?
Yeah.
He just wasn't the same Nikki anymore.
Must have drank too much.
Oh, fuck yourself.
I heard one night he had to belt the guy three times before the guy finally went down. In the old days, Nikki would have decked him with one shot. You add this into the mix.
This movie is so much better than, not so much better, but it is a great movie. People forget how good it is. This is Scorsese kind of doing what Tarantino does, mm-hmm. which is he's just comparing himself to himself now at this phase, and we were comparing him to him, not other films.
Yep.
Well, I remember David Spade in the Hollywood Minute, his review of that movie was, Casino it.
But one-to-one, if you're sitting around on a Saturday afternoon, I would rather watch Casino than Goodfellas. I prefer Casino. I know. And I love Goodfellas.
It's not ridiculous.
But this is an enjoyable movie.
It's that I've seen Goodfellas 23 times. I've seen Casino 7 times. Yeah. So that makes them about even in the which one am I watching now? Because one I've just seen too many times. Mm. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got Rotten Tomatoes from Fitzdog right after this.
$25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for the fifth month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month's shipment includes a 9-ounce jar of TBJ Gourmet's Bacon Jam, perfect for bread, burgers, and every other food on planet Earth. A world championship of guacamole avocado slicer, plus the recipe card for last year's gold medal guac. A copy of Mistrial by Mark Garrigus. Of course, a bottle of Mangria or 33 wine. And lastly, in your shipment, you may find a golden ticket. That's right, one lucky winner will be invited to a morning of Sunday football at the coveted Corolla Car Museum. Sign up at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25 and cross your fingers because you and a guest may be watching the games with Adam and his regular football Sunday crew. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut. Hurry, we will sell out. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Chiefs man, it's Brad from Wisconsin. Here in the Milwaukee area, today the freeway signs read, camp in the woods, not the left lane. So, trying to get clever, get traffic moving. It'll do for now. You could do better, I'm sure, but that'll work for now. At least it's not clicking or ticking. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Fucking L.A. ones are all just slow down. Slow for the cone zone. Like, I'm going 11 miles an hour. Right. How much more? If I fucking slow down, I'm going to have to get a running start. Let me tell you something, Department of Transportation in L.A. if you would like me to slow down more, because I'm only going 9 miles an hour as we speak, I'm going to have to get a fucking running start and jump back up my mom's pussy. That is as far back as I'm going to have to go because I'm already stopped. And I'm fucking, the reason I can read your sign is because I'm not moving. And the sign says slow for the cone zone. All right. We have the Rotten Tomatoes game to play. I don't know why I just wrote this on my list of things I need, but it was a, I don't know, walk down memory lane with Fitzdog. I realized generationally, everyone brings up stuff like, well, do you remember the Vietnam War or Dick Nixon or, I don't know, things laughing or whatever. But I have these weird little generational flashes, which is a couple of years back, I said to young assistant Matt, the Porcelain Punisher, I said, I need to pick up some cleanser. And he went, what are we cleansing? Mm-hmm. And I said, cleanser. And he went, for what? And I went, cleanser. We need to pick up cleanser. And he's like, what are we cleansing? Mm. Like, it's cleanser. For what? I said, it's called cleanser. And he kept going, what are we going to cleanse?
This is not better than who's on first.
And I was like, he had never. Now, by the way, God bless you if you don't know what cleanser is. That means you had a hell of a childhood. Cleanser was a big part of my life. Like, yeah. Who's going to do that toilet? Come on. Yeah. Get it on there. Mm. Get the brush out. Don't miss a spot or whatever. But I just realized life had sailed past cleanser. But also, I don't think anyone. I mean, it's around, but it's not.
The Ajax cylinder.
I was watching Ajax, boom, boom, the leading cleanser. Like, I was singing cleanser songs. Yeah, I was watching commercials. Women were buying it and using it.
The bouncing
it.
Bubbles.
Yeah, they had the bubbles.
By the time it reached our generation, I think it was I always knew it as abrasive cleanser.
Yeah.
So I wonder if by now it's fallen off
cleanser,
completely.
If you told me to get cleanser, I would assume you meant face cleanser.
Wow, yeah. What a good life you kids have lived.
That shit was like genocide for fish. That stuff went down the drain
and
killed Finding Nemo, all his friends.
Dory.
Yeah.
SpongeBob.
There were literally every fifth commercial I saw on TV was for cleanser. And
bizarre.
Yes.
Chris, pull up a bottle of Ajax or Bon Ami. I think it says abrasive cleanser on it. I think that's what they
moved
to.
Yeah, it does. I think it always probably
did. This is the shorthand.
They just call it cleanser because there wasn't any other thing called cleanser. Right. Like you knew what it was. All right, so we're going to play the game.
Let's do it.
Let me hit stamps first and we'll play the game. I run my own business. I wrote a few books. I do the lion's share of the talking on the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast. I don't want to go down to the post office and wait in line and stand there waiting around. So you can go with stamps.com. Letters, packages, merch, whatever we're sending out, we go with stamps.com. We've been with these guys for 10 years now.
Wow.
Stamps.com. All the services of the post office right on my computer and your computer as well. You can print U.S. postage, any letter, any package. Home or office, best part, 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. 700,000 businesses use it already. Special offer, 4-week trial plus free postage and digital scale. No long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone, top of the homepage, type in Adam. Stamps.com, enter Adam. All right.
Listen to that. Flicks, and the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh. If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus 5. It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
So hopefully all of you out in listener land have had a chance to watch the roast of Alec Baldwin last night. But if you didn't, it's okay. You'll still recognize all the big names featured in this week's Rotten Tomatoes game, selecting films based on the panel of roasters during last night's event.
Nice.
Like this.
Nice.
Opening the show was host and roastmaster Sean Hayes, known best for his role as Jack on the hit TV show Will and Grace. But one weird hairpiece and two Farrelly brothers later, Sean is almost unrecognizable as part of another famous trio, Larry, Curly, and Moe.
Mm.
Let's talk about the 2012 film that tries to capture the slapsticky spirit of the vaudeville comedy team, 2012's The Three Stooges.
This didn't do anything, no. Right?
I saw this in the theater.
Is that Will Sasso?
It is. This is a very well-acted movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, you see this?
I missed it, but I do actually remember hearing like that this may someday be a cult movie.
Mm.
Hasn't happened yet.
We're still waiting.
Yeah.
The guy who plays the main one, Dino something Topolis. He
Dino
was great.
Stamatopoulos.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
All right, so everyone's great. Farrelly Brothers are great, but this one just didn't work. But some good performances in the Farrelly Brothers. Are we talking, like, I don't think people think it's fresh, but are we talking about 53 or are we talking about 23 here? You got a pen, Fitzdog?
I got it.
All right, let's see. I say this thing got raked over the coals, and I'm coming in at 31.
I'm going to make it a little too high. This is not that bad of a movie. 49.
Mm, interesting. I grew up on Three Stooges. My dad loves nothing more than the Three Stooges. And this was me giving it that credit. I said 37.
That's what do I have written right here?
37%.
37.
The Three Stooges is rotten at 51.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
What'd you say?
49.
All right.
Damn.
For you.
Right. Dr. Ken Jeong was also on the dice, taking jab after jab for showing off his tiny penis in the Hangover franchise. How dare they? How soon these peons have forgotten Dr. Ken was once the villainous, all-powerful King Argatron, ruler of Xanthia. The fictional kingdom in the live-action, interactive role-playing scenes in the raunchy 2008 Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott comedy. Role Models.
I actually saw this.
As I say, I
really?
Should
have happened on very often.
I should have seen this.
You know, it's weird. Fitzdog, you tell me where you come down on this. When you're doing the roast and they're taking the shots at you and they're calling you Jimmy Kimmel's boyfriend or something, like it's neither here nor there because you're not Jimmy Kimmel's boyfriend. But then there's certain jokes.
Yep, the premise.
But then there's certain jokes that do kind of like, Ken Jeong's up there, and about the fifth comedian that talks about how unfunny his Netflix special was, that does live in some world.
Like, cuts to the quick.
They wouldn't do that if Joe Rogan or Bill Burr was up there, because no one had that thought. You know what I mean?
Right, no, they say you don't know who you really are until you've been roasted. And I remember I did a roast one time, and every single joke came in at how old I look. And I had no idea I looked old. Like, it wasn't part of my identity. It was not how I saw myself.
Right.
And ever since then, I'm, like, very aware of how old I look.
Yeah. Like, they're like, Ken, we saw your Netflix special. I didn't know they filmed open mics. Like, there was three or four. And if you kind of look at the reviews, there seems to be a little reality of that. And he's the sweetest, nicest guy. Rolls right off him and everything else. But I'm just saying there's certain roast.
Single tear down his cheek.
There's certain,
as he smiles.
There's certain
it.
Roast jokes that hit a little closer
Common
to reality.
Truth, yeah.
All right.
Role models.
Role models. God, what the hell was this thing? I sort of remember it. I don't know. Goddamn. What do we do? I mean, Paul Rudd's always funny, right? Well, I've never gone with this one. I'm just going 40.
Oh, 39.
I have no idea.
I'm sticking with 37.
21.
Ooh. Oh, Jesus.
Role Models is certified fresh, fellas.
No, come on.
Lady.
Wow.
At 77.
Whoa.
Stop it.
Once again, I am out of the game.
And the people,
no, we all guess about the same.
We all guess the same. Yeah.
We're all like 40 up.
Now, we all know it was the roast of Alec Baldwin, but the most famous celebrity on the stage last night was, of course, the legendary Robert De Niro. Well, there are so many films of his to choose from. Let's break down his big collaboration with Baldwin. No, not Alec Baldwin. Billy Baldwin, a fireman, teams up with an arson investigator to try and make sense of a series of fires that have been caused by an imprisoned pyromaniac. 1991's Backdraft.
I forgot he was in
Ron Backdraft. Howard directed, I think. Brian Grazer produced.
Yeah. This thing was
like
almost gay porn. It was almost like there'd be a part where they'd jump onto the ladder truck and the guy would pop in his cassette. You know, mixing and everything, and then the cassette would take over the entire theater.
Yes.
You know, and they'd be driving and honking, and they'd be going, yeah. "Cappy, yeah. you better be ready for this." And they'd be like strapping
with the boys.
And it was like it was gay porn. Like,
yeah.
And then it was also the thing too. Like before the backdraft happened, the fire made a noise. Like it had like a
rumble.
Had a Beelzebub-y kind of like, you know. I get it. You got to sweeten things up a little, but you can't sound like a dragon is in the warehouse. I was like, there was that. If you watch any of this movie, it'll feel really dated and really dude-y. Like, we don't do those dude-type movies anymore.
But for whatever reason, they picked...
Hobbs and Shaw's top of the box office.
It's true.
But they picked this one out of the chorus to do a whole theme around at Universal Studios.
Oh,
the Backdraft experience.
Good.
How many years?
I think it's a red flag. Anytime you see a movie poster and it has more than three or four names on it, that means they're really hedging their bets. This one's got Kurt 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 names.
Yeah.
All like, you know, B-level names.
Whatever happened to Rebecca De Mornay?
She was
Backdraft.
I have a drop for her. She was in Wedding Crashers.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Do not remember that.
In the opening scene where they're meeting the divorce between her and Dwight
Yoakam.
Oh, wow.
Right. Her and Dwight Yoakam at the beginning.
You shut your mouth when you're talking
to me. That whole movie is so goddamn funny.
Movie.
It is a goddamn funny movie. All right. People like this movie. I don't know if the critics love it. It's kind of a crowd pleaser, you know.
To your point, though, about not making these dude movies anymore, the ones that we do make, the Fast and Furious and Hobbs and Shaw, that shit, John Wick or whatever, they're tongue-in-cheek. They're self-aware.
Right,
you know what I mean? Know what they are.
They meant it when they did this.
This was earnest.
Right. See if you can find that jumping into the truck and him popping in like, Heat Wave. It was probably like Heat Wave or something that was on the nose that he was on. All right. Critics thought it was fine. At 68.
Ooh, I went a little lower. This is before Ron Howard is Ron Howard, and he wasn't getting the love from the critics. 60.
I said 66, and before you chimed in, I changed it to 68.
71%.
Wow.
That's what I was thinking first, and I lowered it a little.
Backdraft is fresh at 74%.
Okay. Weird game.
Greg, right back in it. Right
back in it.
It just wouldn't be a Comedy Central roast without the Roastmaster General,
Jeffrey Ross.
Now, unlike De Niro, not a lot of films to choose
Has
from.
Has he been in a movie?
But he did lend his voice to one incredibly unnecessary animated movie. Why, oh why, did they make 2017's The Emoji Movie?
Oh. They did?
I think there's a second one that came out this year.
Huh.
Mm. Can we look that up?
The Emoji Movie.
The bottom left one is the poop emoji, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird one to put on the poster. All right.
People
also, it's
emoji.
Weird. You got the poop one, and right next to the poop is the monkey going, did I do that? Which is kind of a weird connection I'm now making. All right. Oh, boy.
Huh.
Is this our last one, Dawson?
I think we have one more.
One more after this? Okay. This critics... They're usually a little better to the kids' movies or the softer on or whatever. I'm sure they hated it, but there's going to be some problems here because this could be the critics going, it's
a kids' movie.
59, fine, or whatever,
no
but it could
way.
Also be 11. I don't know, but sometimes they're not that brutal to the kids' ones. It's close. This game is close. I don't know. I can't figure out if I should play a more conservative protect something or I should go for it. I'll go for it at 17.
You said 11?
Wow.
I said 11.
I know, because I saw your face when I said 11.
Hotel.
Brian, don't play poker. Brian went, huh? Then he looked back at me.
Did you say 11?
I got to follow my heart. I'm going 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
This reminds me of a joke. This guy has sex with this woman, and at the end of it, she goes, "That was really amazing. That was awesome sex." And he goes, "Awesome for you. It was really awesome for me. You're my first one." And she goes, "Really? I'm the first one?" And he goes, "Yeah, I've had sevens. I've had eights. Couple nines.
That's good.
I'm giving it a 19.
The Emoji Movie is rotten at 7.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Fine. Sure.
Wow.
All right.
What's the lowest?
There's zeros.
Are there zeros?
Oh yeah.
Pat was zero, right?
Yeah. The Grandma's Boy, maybe. Or something like that. Mm.
Finally, we get to the man of the hour, Alec Baldwin. Almost 2 decades before Leonardo DiCaprio was raped by a bear in The Revenant, Baldwin went hand to paw against an Alaskan Kodiak, fighting for survival alongside Anthony Hopkins in 1997's The Edge.
I don't remember that.
Now, I'm not going to do what Bald Brian does because I'm magnanimous. This is a good movie.
I've never lied.
Brian,
I've given my opinion.
No, you mislead. I am not going to mislead. This is a good movie. It's written by, what's his name, right?
David Mamet.
It's a Mamet film.
Oh, it's a Mamet film. The critics love Mamet.
This is a good film.
Who directed this?
I must say, I do love the trapped in the wilderness kind of movies. Brian, I've been telling you to watch this movie for a number of years. Put it on your queue. You're not going to be disappointed.
What is the basic premise? How do they end up in the woods, or should we not talk about that?
What happens is Anthony Hopkins is this rich, powerful, tycoon-y, businessy guy who's also fancies himself like a Renaissance man, is well-read and blah, blah, blah. He's got this Elle McPherson is like his beautiful young trophy wife. And for his, 60th birthday, they're all going to a cabin in Alaska, and they're going to fish and they're going to hunt and they're going to do that kind of a thing.
Does something go awry?
They have a great time and come back and change men.
I think Baldwin is kind of one of his lieutenants in his business, but I think he's having an affair with Elle McPherson. And at some point, they go out to, do the, water ski boat, not the ski boat, but the plane, the water plane thing. And of course, there's a bird strike and whatever, and they're trapped, they go down. The pilot always dies because they don't need him for the plot. They need him to fly the plane, but they don't need him for the rest of the movie.
To show how dangerous situation.
Right. And then it's just sort of man in the wilderness, and they're being tracked by a big bear,
and it's Mamet.
It's good stuff.
Wow.
It's good stuff. But I don't
think of this as a Mamet plot.
Glenn Ross with Baldwin also.
Right.
That's right.
It's underrated. I don't know. People didn't seem to be attracted to it, but anyone listening will enjoy this film, including Bald Bryant. God damn it. So,
The Edge.
But, it's not in the 90s. All right, everyone's close. And I said too much. But I still don't know if the critics really embraced it.
Streaming on Hulu.
I'm going to say 78.
All right. The aforementioned Jerry Rice at 80.
All right.
I sort of chose The Edge afresh. I said 66.
I think I nailed it at 77. Feel good about it.
The Edge is on the edge of fresh at 63.
Okay.
We did not need that.
All right.
People have it at 70. It is what's not to like. It's one of those movies where it's like exactly what it is. Excitement, interesting, well, Mamet writing for Hopkins and, great dialogue, great performances.
It's going on the queue.
Check it out. Yeah.
We'll start with Gina Grad. Valiant effort, my dear.
I will guarantee
that you are in the top three.
Oh, good. Okay.
I think she did really well.
Coming with a score of 67.
Okay.
I feel like she did well, yeah. Okay.
Pushing Greg Fitzsimmons off of the podium. You broke 100, though, brother.
Oh, wow.
That's rare for me.
Coming in at 99.
Yeah.
Adam Carolla. You're coming in third place. Bob Ross with a score of 88, leaving us bald Brian.
I think Gina won.
That last one, man, got Gina.
That's his birthday. Like, give him a win. Points.
Bald Brian, happy birthday. You lost. Gina Grad won. Your score, 75.
Ooh, all right.
That last one,
I'm even surprised.
I talked it up too much and inadvertently did what Brian does to all of us.
I'll give you a taste of those winnings.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
You
know how we do
it. Good movie. All right.
Good movie. It's a great game.
Let me hit Castrol Edge and we'll do a little news. Stronger under pressure. Engine can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep the metal parts from rubbing and robbing. And it is 3 times stronger.
Right?
Drew, wake up. It's 3 times stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the best. It is Castrol Edge. All right, quick break. Come back with Fitz Dog and Gina and the news right after this.